لا يموت.
We have been in constant contact with the Israelis to urge restraint, to urge them to think about the consequences of what they're doing.
Lebanon appeals to all its friends around the world to come to its assistance, exert pressure to stop the aggression, and provide humanitarian aid.
We're trying as hard as we can as a country to avoid those civilian targets. Sadly, within this war, there are civilian casualties on both sides.
Just some of the sounds from the conflict taking place in the Middle East from a Lebanese, from an American, from an Israeli official. We're going to be talking here in the first half hour of Issues Etc. about that Middle East conflict, and we're also going to talk about the phenomenon of soldiers, their vocation, and the fact that some 5,500 volunteer soldiers in the U.S. Army have deserted, have crossed the borders to Canada. They don't want to fight in this conflict. Well, we're back live here on Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. After about a week off, I spent with Dr. John Warrett Montgomery and Craig Parton and the students of the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights in Strasbourg, France. A warm week in Strasbourg, and I know that people want to know what the experience was like. How do I summarize the experience spent in Strasbourg with Dr. Montgomery? Think of summer camp with Dr. Montgomery, and only add in moderate amounts of Alsatian wine. That was pretty much the experience there, the whole France experience, and a great week spent with Dr. Montgomery and Craig Parton and the students of the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights. A special thanks to Dr. Montgomery for his invitation to teach there and to the students for their unparalleled patience with me during the sessions where I was teaching. And it's good to be back live with you today. Our call-in numbers, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, as we talk here in the first half hour with Uwe Simonetto from France, issuesetc@kfuo.org, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Coming up in a half hour, we'll start the first section of audio open lines for this Monday here on Issues Etc. We're coming to you live this Monday, July the 17th. We'll be doing audio open lines. O'Reilly has got onto something, and it is the possible Christian symbolism in this blockbuster movie, Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest. I haven't seen the film. Jeff saw the film. Did you think it was it good? Was it entertaining? Yes?
Wasn't as good as the first one.
It wasn't.
Darker. Wasn't as good as the
It was darker. Okay, was
My wife said there's not enough Johnny Depp in this
Not movie. Enough Johnny Depp.
A bunch of Orlando, what's his name?
Orlando Bloom.
She likes him too, but she really likes Johnny Depp.
Well, in any event, but did you notice any Christian symbolism in the thing?
No.
All right. Well, someone has, and we'll have a little bit from the O'Reilly Factor where he kind of grills them on where they think the Christian symbolism in this film is. Very popular series of films, these Johnny Depp films of the Pirates of the Caribbean. Then we'll also hear a little bit from the AP on the return of the much-controverted South Park Scientology episode. They're going to be airing it again. They actually aired more than one. They aired one, got in trouble for it, aired another in a very obvious spoof on the spoof that they'd done before, but the controversial episode on Scientology is coming back to South Park, a CBS report on the religious left and the gay marriage debate, and a CNN story on the popularity of a contender for 2008? Yes, probably, Rudolph Giuliani. That's all coming up during audio open lines. In the 4 o'clock hour, we're going to be talking with Dr. John Beck, author of our Issues Etc., Book of the Month for July, The Land of Milk and Honey, An Introduction to the Geography of Israel, about the geography behind this great story, so familiar from Sunday school, David and Goliath, and some more audio open lines later in the program. Our call-in number is 505-7850. Or 1-800-730-2727, joining us to talk about the Middle East conflict and the desertion of U.S. soldiers, international journalist Uwe Simonetto, author of the book The Acquittal of God, A Theology of Vietnam Veterans, director of the Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation and the Concordia Center for Faith and Journalism. Uwe joins us from France. Welcome back, Uwe.
Good to be back. Hi from sweltering France. It's over 100 degrees here.
I have just come from France. I was in the Strasbourg area, Uwe, and you're right. It's hot.
Oh boy,
there's no two
hot,
ways
yeah.
about it. Heating up in the Middle East, of course, is this conflict. What's your overview of what's going on there between, at this time, Israel and the Hamas leaders, Israel and Lebanon.
Well, the overall view is, let me just quote something that Newt Gingrich said. He thought we are at the beginning of World War III. I wouldn't go that far, that is too speculative, but it is certainly a very, very hot phase in an ongoing world conflict, and that is spreading rapidly. The idea that Israel attacks or counterattacks literally Lebanon might strike many of your listeners as appalling, because obviously it hits actually an innocent country, or what seems to be an innocent country, but it is not, because, I mean, as you can see, these hundreds and hundreds of sophisticated rockets that Hezbollah is lobbing against Israel and Israeli cities and civilians did get to the Lebanon unhindered. And so therefore, I think the Israelis are perfectly within their rights to respond and to make sure that that this cancer, which is Hezbollah, which is a terrorist organization funded by both Iran and Syria, this cancer is eradicated.
Is this a formal war, as in the Six-Day War that you covered as a journalist, or is this just Israel trying to deal with the terrorism problem?
Well, it is both. It is a war, as we covered it as I covered it in the Six-Day War in 1967, in a sense, because clearly Israel is actually busy conceding territory it had occupied back in 67 when I was there. I covered it from the Arab side, from the Jordanian side. But you cannot return occupied territory if you're sane, without making sure that this territory is not then going to be used against you and your civilian population. And since Israel is the only sound democracy in that region, I think we should all pray that that they keep these guys at bay.
What? And, go ahead.
And not cheer on President Chirac here, who in his inimitable style, of course, condemned Israel and took once again the side of the Arabs. But then, you know, his spine is as wobbly as a chewing gum.
What are the stated goals, if any, of Hezbollah vis-a-vis Israel?
Oh, I think the stated goal of Hezbollah being the long arm of the of Iran and Syria, I think, is ultimately the destruction of the State of Israel. It's not even a reversal of just what has happened in 1967, which some of us might consider as legitimate, because these territories fell to Israel after Israel had won that war, but they were not part of the original territory of Israel. But Hezbollah wants to reverse 1948 and the creation of the State of Israel and a safe territory for Jews and others to live in. And we shouldn't kid ourselves. This is very much part of a conflict and of a muscle flexing of the Iranian state. And I just want to throw this in. Our wonderfully pious ex-president Carter, who's handed over so glibly Iran to Khomeini and co. back into 1979 and betrayed his not very sympathetic ally, the Shah. I wonder how he feels now. You don't hear a word from him, because, you know, they actually, at the time, Carter, Helmut Schmidt of Germany, whether he's Carter's Prime Minister of France and Prime Minister Callaghan of England, actually surrendered Iran to these maniacs, of whom we knew that they were maniacs, And now we're paying the bill, and the world's paying the bill for that. And I hope somebody's going to ask Carter that. I don't see that in the media.
If the connection between Hezbollah and Iran, especially the leadership of Iran, is undeniable, do you expect Israel to deal directly with Iran at any point?
You mean deal in negotiations or
well,
or
either in negotiations or in to widen this conflict to locales closer to Iran.
Well, I personally, as long as you have this demented president in Iran and this radical government there, I don't for the life of me see how Israel will negotiate with him, or indeed how he will negotiate with the Israelis. Of course, if there are other forces work in Iran, as we know, including, by the way, a movement towards Christianization of Iran. I mean, it's a subtle movement, but nonetheless, it's existent. And if they should succeed in overthrowing this president or his government, then that might be another deal. But I don't see this overnight. On the other hand, I don't see Israel attacking Iran right away unless they are themselves attacked. And then, of course, if that happens, I don't think Israel will pull punches. There's no peace movement of the American type with a bunch of liberal Democrats sitting on Martha's Vineyard saying, well, let's have peace in the Middle East or something like that. You know, they can't afford that. These guys have to survive.
We're talking about the current state of the Middle East conflict with Uwe Simonetto, an international journalist, a regular guest here on Issues Etc., author of the book The Acquittal of God, A Theology of Vietnam Veterans. We'll turn to the issue in a few moments of soldiers' vocation and a rather large number of desertions during the Iraqi conflict on the U.S. side. Uwe is director of the Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation and the Concordia Center for Faith and Journalism, and he's joining us from France. Our call-in number is 505-7850. Or 1-800-730-2727. Coming up in just about 15 minutes, we're going to start our first segment of Audio Open Lines live this Monday on Issues Etc., July the 17th. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, always available to you for your questions and your comments, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Just a couple of the things we're going to be discussing during Audio Open Lines, laying them on the table, and of course, Open Lines is always anything you want to talk about. The O'Reilly Factor has a segment on the possible Christian symbolism in the new hit movie, Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest. We know it's got big stars. We know that it's got a big box office. Does it have Christian symbolism, a Christian theme running through it? We'll answer that question during Audio Open Lines. And we'll also hear a CBS News report on the religious left and the gay marriage debate coming up here in about 15 minutes during Audio Open Lines on Issues Etc. Uwe, is Israel blameless in this whole conflict? In other words, have there been actions on the part of Israel that have either worsened their own situation vis-a-vis Hezbollah, or some might say their actions right now, taking on targets within Lebanon, are completely unjustified. They're dragging Lebanon into this, and there's no real connection.
Yeah.
How would you evaluate this question?
Well, to begin with, in a conflict where there are always two involved, and this would be a strange world if one side weren't blameless. Having said this, though, I have to reiterate what I said before. Israel has to defend itself and its own people, and Hezbollah is determined to destroy Israel. And Lebanon has allowed these weapons to come in, and actually Hezbollah to rule the southern parts unchecked. Which is not to say that this is what the Lebanese fervently wished. Quite to the contrary. But I mean, they are so weak, and their army is so weak, and they are so domestically so divided that they cannot actually exercise any power over their own country. And so, therefore, Israel is doing this and is trying to force their hands, which ultimately might mean that Israel, they will have to concede to Israel the right to take care of those parts of Lebanon that have been taken over by those terrorists.
Let's go to the phones, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Up first on this Monday here on Issues Etc., Lana calling from New Haven, Missouri. Hi, Lana. Thanks for waiting.
Hi. How are you guys doing?
Very well.
Good. Listen, my knowledge of the Middle East is very small. I've tried to understand the conflict for 2 years. I'm Missouri Synod Lutheran. I live out here by Pastor Herman Otten, if that gives you any clue. And so I just, I started trying to understand what Zionism is. And as I look at this whole thing, I believe that whoever helped Israel get back home to that land has gone against God himself, because I don't think those people were ever supposed to return there. They were to be scattered because of their rejection of Christ.
Lana, thank you very much for the call. It's kind of interjecting an alternate to what would be kind of the Zionist view of this whole conflict. In fact, I think her call occasions response. How do you respond to both Lana, but also on the other side, Uwe, those who say, look, America owes its blessings from God to its affiliation with Israel, and Bush should get up off his duff, and we should be over there fighting for Israel as much as we're fighting for the reconstruction of Iraq?
Well, let's first answer to Lana. I mean, we need approximately 3 weeks to discuss the Zionism issue here. if you really think that this is against this is against God and as a punishment here because they don't accept Christ, well, first of all, I think that is unbiblical. Secondly, if it were against the will of God, then Israel would have been destroyed. But may I suggest that those people who are fighting Israel at the moment are the very same people who are also fighting Christians. And certainly Israel is a safer place for Christianity than any of those places run by Hezbollah and their pals. That is one thing. The other thing is, what should America do? I think America should, and Europe for that matter, should do exactly what they're doing, that is, to lend them support. But for the time being, I don't see any need for Americans or Europeans to fight there. As you know, there was the G8 meeting in Russia right now. These are the eight major industrialized powers, and suggestion has been made, or demand has been made, that both the United Nations and the European Union will send forces there to keep peace, which is going to be a very interesting thing, because this is supported by the Germans, and you might suddenly find Germans keeping Arabs and Israelis apart, which has some irony in it. But it is likely, and the French would then, of course, be more on the Arab side. The Germans presumably would be more sympathetic with the Israelis.
Uwe, can you give us a few minutes on the other side of this break?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
All right, go ahead and finish your thought.
Okay. No, but what I want to say is, I would not propose that that at this point the Western powers should actually get involved militarily on the side of Israel. I mean, I think they have shown in the past that their infantry are more efficacious fighters than Americans or Europeans have been since World War II. They can take care of themselves, but they should have our moral support, and we should definitely say, look, you have the right to defend yourself against terrorism.
A quick call before we go to our break, and Uwe will be with us for a few minutes on the other side of the break to talk about soldiers, their vocation, and the rather large number of desertions on the U.S. side during the Iraqi conflict. Let's talk with Roger, who calls from his car. Hi, Roger.
Hi. The only question I really have, and I heard it, it's not, why did they give the Jews Israel after the Second World War? Why didn't they give them part of Germany? And maybe something like the president of Iran, I don't think even close like he does. I agree with Israel, but that thought did occur to me. How did is it because it was the promised land, or that's where Jerusalem was?
Roger,
what was the train of thought for that?
Thank you very much, Roger. Uwe, you've got about a minute and a half.
Yeah,
can you begin to respond?
I didn't hear that question. Sorry, it's not a very strong connection.
He was curious, how was it after the Second World War that that expatriated Jews were granted the land of Israel, at least a portion of the land of Israel, by the assembled nations after the defeat of Nazism?
Well, to begin with, of course, there had already been a fairly massive re-immigration of Jews into Palestine before the war, actually since since the beginning of the 20th century, and there was already a large community there. And then, of course, you had massive immigration by refugees, and of course the Israelis, the Jews claimed that this was their traditional homeland, and then of course, you know, there's a whole long history that one has to read up on, which we don't have the time now to discuss, and the role of Britain in this whole thing, which is very, very interesting. But I suggest that we discuss this another time, because we can't. We would be talking too long on about this. And
then, with only 1 minute before we go to our break here, Uwe, what do you think the prospects of Israel's ability to deal with Hezbollah, both at home and in Lebanon, are? Do you think they will actually be able to cripple their ability to wreak havoc within the borders of Israel?
I think so. I mean, cripple the ability, not destroy them, but cripple them, yes. I mean, Israel has a first-rate intelligence service, and I'm quite sure they have infiltrated Hezbollah and everybody else. They have a very powerful military, and they're not wimps. I mean, they're doing what they have to do. And so I think the chances that they will keep them under control in some way, not destroy them, I don't think that's possible immediately. But these chances are very strong, yes. In fact, I think that is going to be, that is a desired outcome, so that the next step will be for Israel to be able to return occupied territories to the Palestinians. And they wouldn't be able to do that as long as Hezbollah and Hamas and all these guys are engaging in terrorism.
Uwe Simonetto is our guest. He'll be with us for a few minutes on the other side of the break. We're going to turn to the Iraqi situation, especially the reported, almost between 5,000 and 6,000 U.S. GIs who have already deserted, mainly to Canada, during the Iraqi conflict. Uwe sees there two parallels, both the desertion issue with Vietnam and also, what he says, a few bad eggs in the U.S. military, raping and pillaging. Sooner or later, how will that change the mindset of those against the war in the U.S. toward those soldiers? We'll answer those questions on the other side. Then we'll start audio open lines. Uwe Simonetto is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're back live this Monday, June the 17th. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Deaconess Pam Nielsen, senior editor at Concordia Publishing House, on the Christ-centered cross focus of Growing in Christ, the new Sunday school curriculum from Concordia Publishing House.
We've been very intentional in one, teaching the scriptures. We are concerned about Bible literacy. Pastors tell us they get kids in confirmation that they don't know any of the Bible stories, they don't know any of the Bible people. So we're trying to teach the Bible stories, the who, what, where, and when. But we're teaching them in the context of Christ, and every story, every week, be it Old or New Testament, connects to Christ as the Savior.
For more information about Growing in Christ, call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, or find the Growing in Christ logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org. It's a Christ-centered, cross-focused Sunday school curriculum, Growing in Christ.
Planned Parenthood may be coming to a mall near you.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Planned Parenthood of Minnesota has opened a new express center in a suburban mall that relies on a new method of luring young women as customers, beauty products, and possibly soon spa treatments. The mall-based clinic is a new effort to target middle and upper-income women. It won't do abortions, but will have the morning-after pill, which can cause an abortion in some situations. Despite the fact abortions won't be performed on site, pro-life advocates have it right when they say wherever you find Planned Parenthood, you find abortion close by.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. For more about our work to mobilize and advance pro-life women in politics, visit our website at sba-list.org.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. How do you tough it out? Competitors in the Tour de France willingly take on grueling rides through the mountains. Ride a bike uphill in the mountains? Most of us don't even take the stairs. So much in life softens us, doesn't harden us to face the tough times. Lance Armstrong wrote in his book, It's Not About the Bike, what makes a great endurance athlete is the ability to absorb potential embarrassment and to suffer without complaint. If it was a suffer fest, I was good at it. Lance Armstrong drew on his own resources to win. For your suffer fests, model yourself after the one called the suffering servant in the prophets. That's God's son Jesus. And do more than look to him as a model. Look to him as Savior for time and for eternity. When resignation and defeat seem to be your only prospect, he says, My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. 2 Corinthians 12:9. And in Matthew 19:26, it says, With God all things are possible. We know that suffering creates endurance, says Romans chapter 5. Endurance creates character, and character creates confidence. We are not ashamed to have this confidence, because God's love has been poured into our hearts by the Holy Spirit. Spirit of God, in this week's Sufferfests, carry me to victory.
July is American Red Cross Cardinals Month, celebrating the inaugural season of the new Busch Stadium and helping save lives. Every presenting donor at all Red Cross donation centers and participating blood drives will receive a special edition John Pills t-shirt with the drawing of the new Busch Stadium on the front and the Cardinals and Red Cross logos on the back. To find center locations, hours, and donation opportunities near you, please call the American Red Cross.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. Coming to you live this Monday, July, not June, July the 17th. Uwe C. Minetto is our guest for the next few minutes. We'll round up our conversation with him and then start some audio open lines hearing about the possible religious Christian symbolism, at least according to one group, in the new hit movie Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest. Uwe is an international journalist, author of the book The Acquittal of God, A Theology of Vietnam Veterans, director of the Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation, and the Concordia Center for Faith and Journalism. He joins us from France. Our call-in numbers 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Would you just at least give us a picture, because you had described this a little bit earlier in our conversation, Uwe, about the number of Christians over there, the number of Christians in Israel, rather small. What about Christians in Lebanon?
Well, Lebanon used to have 51% Christians. The figure is now down to about 30%. Primarily Maronite, meaning Eastern Catholic, affiliated with Rome Christians, and Greek Orthodox.
Are they forgotten, do you think, by American Christians, many of whom, at least in the media, are calling for Israel to ramp up its shelling of Lebanon, to deal harshly with the Palestinians, or even American involvement in this conflict?
Well, I think that the Lebanese Christians are less forgotten than other Middle Eastern Christians, simply because they still have a majority in parliament, and traditionally, the president of Lebanon is Christian, and of course the Christians some Christians have for a long time been allies of the Israelis in this thing. No, I don't think they are forgotten, but of course they are also not the ones who are most affected by these by these attacks, Israeli attacks, because that is that very often affects the poorer neighborhoods, alas, and of course, poorer neighborhoods are not the Christian ones, but tend to be Muslim ones.
How is France reacting to this conflict? You're in France.
Well, the official France, one always has to distinguish between the two. The official France, where Chirac comes pretty solidly out against Israel, contrary to most other Western countries. But then let's not forget that Chirac does anything that he feels is suitable to his relationship with the Arab world, which supplies him with oil, and not only that, something that pacifies the large, enormously large Arab minority here in this country. And you remember that he, for example, accompanied with a doleful, mournful face, the coffin of Yasser Arafat when this guy died. And let's not forget that Yasser Arafat was terrorist number one when I was younger over in the Middle East. But the French population, certainly the people that I'm talking to here very extensively, my friends here, take a totally different tack. I mean, they are much more on the side of Israel.
Turning to the subject of Iraq, you note two parallels with our Vietnam experience, that long war there, the first of which is what seems to be at least relatively or unexpectedly large number of U.S. GIs who are deserting this conflict. Tell us about it.
Yeah, well, here this is, you know, the superficial parallel. Obviously, you have on the one hand, you have these deserters now, 5,500 or even more, going to the habitual habitats of American deserters, meaning Canada and Scandinavia. So there is the parallel here. The difference, the first difference is, of course, that these guys are professional soldiers who volunteer to be in the military, whereas in the Vietnam War, which I covered for 5 years, the deserters tended to be draftees, and one could be much more sympathetic to the draftees. Here, with these deserters, you know, suddenly deciding, oh, this is not my kind of war, so they go, is a totally different issue. And if you then look at this from a theological perspective, namely from a Lutheran perspective, where Luther said, yes, of course, if you really are very, very clear that a war is an unjust war, then you might then you are compelled to refuse to serve. But then there is not a footnote in Luther's famous treatise soldiers can also be saved, that if that is the case, then you just cross the border to Canada and be comfortable. No, Luther said, well, if you have to do that, you might lose your life and you might lose your home and your family and your freedom, but that is the risk you have to take. And that's what the Christians have to do. They have to take a cross upon themselves and suffer, which these guys are not doing. So, and secondly, whether or not this is an unjust war is, and whether or not a private or a sergeant or a corporal can decide that this is an unjust war is very questionable. I mean, you know, we are fighting, after all, in that part of the world, people who blow up civilians at an enormously large rate every day, who decapitate innocent people, who plant bombs all over the place, who blow up mosques and God knows what. So, I mean, we're not talking about a war against some nice, nice and humble population of Liechtenstein between Switzerland and Austria. But we're talking about some very nasty people where one can certainly say that there was is some just war here. So that is the one scene. The other parallel is, of course, the crimes that allegedly GIs have committed. And then we have to, and, you know, this reminds one of the famous My Lai incident by Lieutenant Kelly, where this platoon led by Kelly went about and slaughtered civilians in a Vietnamese village and burned it down. But now, as someone who has been through several wars and who has lived also through World War II in Germany, let me tell you something. War crimes happen everywhere, and even on the American side and the Allied side, war crimes were committed against German civilians and Austrian civilians, because I can remember as a child American pilots having fun popping workers off the fields, workers who more often than not were Polish or French prisoners. This did not mean, however, that this was American policy. It means that you had some bad eggs doing this. And in a wartime situation, bad eggs are come out and do the worst things you can imagine, as indeed heroes become apparent and do the most glorious things you can imagine. That's what war is like. And you can't treat war and look at a war and say, well, this is like a nice little sort of baseball game.
Finally, then, with only a minute here, Uwe, do you expect that the reception that many Vietnam vets received returning from Vietnam will become similar, or the reception that USGIs returning from Iraq will be receiving?
Yeah, well, that is what I fear. If that happens, I mean, you know, I'm not very confident that the American population are going to be very faithful to their soldiers. They've behaved abominably after the Vietnam War. Really treating their veterans very badly. And you know, if it suddenly becomes inconvenient, this war becomes too troublesome, there might be a lot of people who listen to agitators, both in politics and in the media, and then suddenly, you know, the public opinion turns against, not just against those who initiated the war, but against those who fought the war. And this is why I think it is high time that we keep reminding the American public of what horrible things have been done back in the 60s and 70s to these soldiers whom I served later on as a chaplain intern in the VA. And this is what I wrote a book about, too. And I think that should be rammed in. Don't do this. Don't start mistreating your own soldiers.
Folks, you can check out the website for the Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation that Uwe heads up. Just go to our website, issue ztc.org. On the left-hand side of the homepage, click links. Scroll down, and you'll find a direct link to Uwe Simonetto and the Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation. Uwe is an international journalist. He's author of the book he just mentioned, The Acquittal of God, A Theology of Vietnam Veterans, and he's also director of the Concordia Center for Faith and Journalism. He joined us from France. Uwe, thanks for your time. I hope you can keep cool over there.
Thanks. Try my very best. I'll get a beer in a minute.
Yes. Good for you. That always helps. Thank you very much for being our guest.
Cheers. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Well, we've got audio open lines for the remainder of this hour, and then we'll take a little break and have a conversation with the author of our Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for July, The Land of Milk and Honey, about the geography and the story of David and Goliath. But let's get started with audio open lines. We often talk about the movies here on the program, and we often are looking for, you know, by way of watching these films as Christians with wisdom and discernment, looking for Christian themes or Christian symbolism in the popular films of today and yesteryear. Is there a Christian theme in the movie that's just hit the theaters and is making a lot of money, the latest Pirates of the Caribbean saga, Dead Man's Chest? Here's a recent segment on this issue from the O'Reilly Factor. Your question for you on the other side, if you saw the Pirates of the Caribbean this weekend, what did you think of it? Do you think it has Christian themes in it? Did you notice any Christian symbolism in this movie? Let's hear this story from the O'Reilly Factor.
Back in the book segment tonight already, Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest, has grossed about $350 million worldwide. It's only been out a week. That is almost miraculous. And while we're on that subject, the website movieministry.com says there is a Christian theme running through the pirate movie, which may be news to some of our swashbuckling friends. Joining us now from San Diego is Dr. Mark Newman, the president of movieministry.com.
Hi, Bill.
All right. Now, I didn't see the dead man's chest. I did see the first one. I didn't see a lot of church going in there or praying as Johnny Depp cut people with ribbons. But maybe I missed it. So what's going on in this one?
Well, all of the Pirates of the Caribbean movies so far, I've had a lot of deep spiritual content in them, and the easiest way to slip it in is by making sure that people are having a good time. Dead Man's Chest is all about how people imperil, wager their souls, and why people are so interested in forestalling some kind of day of judgment. So all the way through the film, we have people gambling for their souls or selling their souls to Davy Jones with the express purpose of holding off the time in which they're going to have to meet their maker.
All right, so I get it. None of the pirates wants to die because they think they're all going to hell, so they're trying to delay the Grim Reaper. But there isn't any reference outright to Christianity, is there?
Well, there's a wonderful scene very early in the film where a couple of the pirates are rowing in a boat. They've just escaped from jail, and they used to be these immortal ghosts from the first film, but they've been humanized as a result of getting all their treasure back and having their blood sacrificed, which happens in the first movie. And so the guy is looking at a Bible. Now, he's reading it upside down because he's illiterate, but the guy asks him, you know, what are you doing that for? And he says, well, you know, we're not immortal anymore, and so now we have to take care of our immortal souls.
Now, do you feel that this was purposely put in this movie, or is it just, you know, somebody in a screenplay going, how do I fill this scene?
You know, Bill, there's no way to really know, but one thing that I do know is that art has a tendency to transcend the intentions of its makers, and so I think that these stories are the kind of stories that resonate with people. Stories, you see a million movies where people get shot or cut or stabbed, and it doesn't have nearly the resonance as it does when you look at a bunch of people who are trembling over the idea of whether or not they're going to lose their soul.
All right, is it their soul or their life? Because nobody wants to die.
Oh, no, it's their soul, because there's a great scene early on in the film when Davy Jones is looking at a man and he's giving them all the opportunity to escape meeting their maker by serving 100 years before the mast on his ship. And one of the young men is holding a rosary in his hand and with a cross clearly identified, and he looks at him and he makes him the offer, and the guy says, no, I'd rather take my chances. In other words, in the afterlife, he feels secure. And so, of course, they cut his throat and throw him overboard. But the fact of the matter is, he would rather,
sure,
like many Christian martyrs in the past, would rather die than serve on a hellish ship.
All right. Very interesting, Doctor. We appreciate it.
Okay. Now, I haven't seen the film, so I cannot comment directly on this one. Christian symbolism, a Christian message, if you will, a theme in Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest. I want to hear from you, those of you who have seen the film. I guess it opened with some pretty healthy box office. And, of course, the first one made so much money that no one expected them to make. It's a Disney film. And so it's the first Disney film that I saw in a long time that was for kids, but kind of not for kids. It's got some very interesting characters, and people seem to have bonded to the strange pirate characters here, but did it have Christian symbolism? If you saw the film, did you notice it? Do you think there's nothing to this, or there's something to it? It's audio open lines for the next 10 minutes on the program. Our in-studio email address, perhaps some of our email listeners watch the film, issuesetc@kfuo.org, and our call-in numbers, we're coming to you live this Monday. It's July the 17th, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727, Christian symbolism in the Pirates of the Caribbean. Now, by that standard, here's just my thought on it, since I haven't seen the film, I will opine nonetheless. By the examples that he cited there, it seems to me that just about any film could qualify. And if someone's concerned about what happens to him after death, is that necessarily a Christian theme? If someone's reading their Bible, he cited the example of one of the pirates reading his Bible upside down. Someone's reading his Bible. Does that necessarily have anything that lends itself to a Christian theme or Christian symbolism? Even if crosses appear, I mean, there are a lot of movies out there wherein crosses appear. Now, we've talked about Christian themes in the Veggie Tales, trying to find anything remotely Christian rather than just simply moral about the Veggie Tales. They did a pirate movie, the Jonah movie. We had listeners saying, yes, there was something Christian in there, and they found crosses and the masts and the, what are those, yard arms or whatever, and they saw a very sound Christian theme there. What about the latest pirate movie, Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, and our in-studio email address, issues, etc, at KFUO.org. We begin with Frank, who's calling from St. Louis. Hi, Frank.
The worst thing about going to see this Pirates of the Caribbean stuff is actually that I'm blind. And my wife took me to one, and I had no idea that it was the second one. And I hadn't even seen the first one or, you know, heard. So I go and I get drugged into this thing, and I'm just sitting there, and the sound effects are wonderful. And I'm thinking, this sounds like the makers of Hercules, the legendary journeys, or Xena, the warrior princess, or something clowny kind of comedy like that. And before I knew nothing about this movie, and I went there and suffered through it. I said suffered through it. But at least it had a lot of good musical stuff in it, and a lot of humor and sad satirical humor. But I thought Leslie Nielsen or maybe one of the makers of Meatballs or Spaceballs or something came back or something and did some kind of remake of some kind of movie. But I'm addicted to it, and I'm going to have to go see 1 and 3 whether I can see or not. The wife said so.
Okay, so did you notice in what you heard? Obviously, you didn't see it, Frank. But in what you heard, did you notice any Christian symbolism, any reference to Christianity?
No. All no, right. I think it was more on the lines of we have a choice in life, or whatever it is, and everybody wants to know what the afterlife holds, and we have these fears, and so they're just playing on our fears and messing with our minds, giving us a few options we don't know we really have.
All right, Frank, thank you very much. Now, there's Frank's review. Didn't notice anything overtly Christian in the film. Others have. What about the rest of you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. DB is listening in Florissant. Hi, DB.
Hey there. I'm a big fan of these movies, and anytime I'm looking at films, I'm always looking for reality, the reflection of honest reality, I suppose. But not so much. I didn't see anything uniquely Christian in the sense that any writer was trying to portray something Christian. But I did see an accurate reflection of our culture in a couple of ways. And one way was the mix-up of religion and the confusion as to what really does happen in the afterlife. But I also did notice something that I think is a good jumping point for maybe discussing things with non-Christians or just thinking about reality, is that people are always trying to avoid death. People are essentially afraid of, I think, what they know in their hearts is beyond the grave, and they may not know what it is specifically, but they know there's something out there. And so there is a lot of an understanding of the mortality of the human soul and escaping the realities of eternity and human beings trying to escape that reality and not successfully ever doing it. So I don't know that there's anything uniquely Christian in the sense of, like I said, the writer's trying to attempt to do that. But I do think there's things in there that are sometimes better than what you hear in our culture about people saving themselves. There is a definite sense of mortality and trying to and fruitlessly escaping that reality.
DB, before I let you go, do you mind me asking, what do you do for a living?
I work with computers. So I'm an IT person.
Okay, we might want to think about DB as the Issues Etc. movie critic. He had some pretty salient thoughts there. Thanks for the call, DB.
You're
thanks
welcome.
For listening.
Thanks.
Well, I wonder what the appeal is, because I saw the first one, and Johnny Depp is compelling. He's a comic. Anything he's done that's of a comedic nature, I find at least passingly entertaining. I thought, what was it, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, not the remake, but the make of that famous book, was rather funny, although I did think the Oompa Loompas were funnier than Johnny Depp. Johnny Depp did kind of he was Michael Jackson and Prince and a couple other people all rolled into one, but he can certainly craft an interesting and bizarre character on the screen. Did you notice any overt Christian symbolism other than what DB mentioned there? Just kind of the notion that people fear death, they want to cheat death, they want to find a way around what they know to be the ultimate end. After death, well, staying on the theme of pop culture, Comedy Central is planning to re-air the Emmy-nominated South Park episode called Trapped in the Closet. If you remember, we talked about this on the program after it aired. They're going to replay it on the 19th. That's a little bit later this week. It's about Scientology. It was scheduled to rerun in March, but was abruptly pulled from the network because of its controversial nature. Here's a story from the AP.
Trapped in the Closet, the controversial South Park episode that skewers Scientology and its popular proponent Tom Cruise, is hitting the airwaves again. The episode, which earned an Emmy nomination, was last scheduled to rerun in March. But according to reports, it was abruptly pulled by the network to appease Cruise and his partners in Mission Impossible 3. Comedy Central spokesman Tony Fox says the network rotates its 150 episodes of South Park in and out of the broadcast schedule. This episode, he said, just happens to be rotating back in. In Wednesday's edition of the trade paper Variety, Matt Stone, the show's co-creator, said, "If they hadn't put this episode back on the air, we'd have had serious issues, and we wouldn't be doing anything else with them." Trapped in the Closet is scheduled to air on July 19th. Shirley Smith, The Associated Press.
Well, I saw the first one when it first aired, the Scientology episode, and then very shortly afterward, they played another episode. I think this was either the season closer or the season opener, where Chef leaves. And Chef leaves, and it was an obvious parallel to, is it Isaac Hayes who does the voice of Chef? Isaac Hayes, who's a Scientologist, left the show, stopped doing the voice work for the show after they aired the Scientology episode. And in this episode where Chef leaves, they make it really clear that Chef is leaving to kind of join this nefarious secret organization of individuals. It was hard. And then they tied in some parallels with the latest Star Wars movie, because Chef becomes kind of a Darth Vader character. Well, I said this, in fact, when we were over in France last week. I even referenced the South Park episode about Scientology, said that they accurately depicted, through their crude humor, they accurately depicted what Scientology actually teaches, and what Scientology teaches made for some really funny television. Even without the characters, it made for some really funny television. Coming up later in this, well, I guess it's going to be in the fall, September 18th through the 20th, on the campus of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, they will seriously deal with the issue of a Christian vision for love and marriage. This is something you don't want to miss. Whether you're married, whether you think about being married, or whether you don't think about being married, love and marriage is a subject that Scripture deals with in a number of ways, mostly pointing to Christ's sacrifice for us. For more information on this love and marriage seminar at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, give them a call, area code 260-452-2204, or go to our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find more information there. When we come back, we'll be talking about the geography surrounding David and Goliath.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM 850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.